What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Spring Legend Podcast. Today it is yours truly, Hunter Farrier, joining you with the usual Chase Farrier, and we might as well make this a midweek podcast at this point. Yep. It's 3 weeks in a row. Our Mondays turned to a Tuesday and perhaps a Wednesday, but it's officially turkey season eve, yeah. Down here in Mississippi, which is where we are located, and we are as giddy as I'll get out. And the nerves are kind of setting on end, I believe, looking up today and looking at the weather. And I feel like it wasn't long ago I was trying my best to pull up a 60-day forecast, trying to figure out what the weather's going to be, and now it's in the screen, you know, like the next 2 or 3 days or whatever. Let you know it's really... Not only will it not be long now, it is around the corner and kind of here, you know. It feels like turkey season, smells like turkey season, sounds like turkey season outside when you walk out. And all the preparations that go into it, we're late on a lot of them, as always.
Per usual.
Yep.
Noticed the pollen on the windshield. Yeah. Had time for that. Lovely stuff.
That caught me by surprise, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I kind of forgot about it. But this morning, I flipped on the... I thought I just had a bunch of dust on there, and I threw the windshield wipers, and it was just a yellow line. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, it's here.
Yep. I did the same yesterday, and I actually just rinsed my truck off before getting oil changes and stuff like that, trying to get ahead of the game. And, I came back out the next morning, and there was, you know, that dust on there, and, you know, folks cutting the grass first time and stuff like that, and I thought that's what it was. And it, like you said, that little yellow line it makes whenever you hit the windshield wiper fluid. I went, uh-oh, better go on. And I need to work us out a sponsorship with Zyrtec. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
If we don't really have sponsors on this podcast, but if Zyrtec's listening, holler at us because we'd put it to good use. Yeah. Whatever stipulations you got in mind, we will abide by. Because I go through them, couldn't think of a better guest to follow up Mr. Mayfield, and I wasn't gonna put that weight on anybody but us, because that's gonna be really hard. Well, Dixon texted me and said, "Yeah, whoever follows that one's gonna have some big shoes to fill." And I told him, I said, if Ben Lee was here himself, I don't know if he could come in and do a better podcast than that. And he was, you know, straight up entertainer. Mm. And that was pretty awesome. If you haven't listened to that one, the two prior to this one with Mr. George Mayfield and our buddy Blake Dial, y'all need to do that, because there's a lot jam packed into that, and it's got a lot of good feedback from other folks, and folks who know him, and folks who knew of him, and folks who have never heard of him. You know, you'd be surprised how many people live in the deep south and was like, wait, who is this guy? You mm-hmm. know, I mean, it's just generational barrier there. He's not on a bunch of media and, you know, stuff that we are used to consuming our, you know, news and info and, you know, knowledge from. He's, you know, pretty low key on that. So if you hadn't heard by word of mouth or anything like that, or run into him, might not have a reason to know him. So we got to know him pretty good in that one. And wanted to remind y'all real quick about the Wisdom Series stuff. We got them in, got them sent out, all the pre-orders out. Everybody's starting to get them now. Really pumped about them, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that I had little faith in them looking or feeling or performing as good as the sample did, because I knew, you know, what we were getting. But to hold it in your hand feels a lot better, you know, when it's been, you know, months since you gave the official okay. We got them in and had a good old time the other day. Chase and Seals and our buddy Mason and I, we went out and had to get us some cool product pictures. And Chase and Seals are some heck of a models, let me tell you that. They got up in there. We got all decked out, and I was like, I don't know, we've never done this kind of stuff. And one of those bite the bullet, somebody's got to do it, and we didn't have time to, you know, outsource it or really. And I really wanted to get some pictures up before the season, because that's when you buy them. And that's, you know, folks want to see what they're going to look like against a tree more than against a, you know, some wood colored paneling, which is all we got up in here.
Plenty of that.
Oh, yeah, we got a lot of wood colored paneling. This whole place is just covered in it. I'm a big fan of that, if you haven't figured it out. Even when we started in the podcast, I took guest bedroom, it's not Chase's house, and covered it in wood. We can't afford the wood to actually put up like the barn wood, but I'm like, I can get that $20 panel, and it looks kind of like wood. Right. So we've got a lot of different variations up in here.
As long as it holds insulation, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, which is coming in pretty handy at 85 degrees today.
Yeah.
But now we went out there, and then Mason had his camera, which is better than ours, and did some videos and stuff, and we all had our shotguns and everything, and decided to do some patterning, which 2 weeks ago, I was talking about I've never patterned my shotgun, and I was saying that, kind of biting my lip, going, I'm going to have to do that this year, because I'm officially out of my stock.
Stockpile.
Right. I mean, I had a pile. When Apex first started making the shells or whatever back in 17, or I don't know when they really started, but whenever they did, I bought, like, boxes and boxes of them because, I remember sitting in the middle of two chicken houses on the phone trying to find service whenever they released. And this was, like, my dad sent me an email or something that had a link to them, maybe, and I bought literally as like a paycheck's worth of shells. So I've been good on shells for a while.
Right.
And I don't like to change nothing. I've tried an 870, same exact setup, whatever. Got a choke from probably Walmart on it and I haven't even taken it out to look and see what it is. And I've shot these just this old black box of Apex and it's got nines. It's got like some handwritten something on the inside. And I just, when I get through with these five, I'll grab another one and I got them in a certain spot. And this year I was in Minnesota and I ran out and I was like, we've reached the end of the line, and thank goodness my dad had I don't know whether he just left them in there, like, or I grabbed them. He had some shells from whenever we met up with y'all. Mm-hmm. So I had two in there and I killed two more turkeys and that was the last two shells I had. So I needed to shoot before this year. I could just go grab some more, same parameters. I don't even know the details of a 3-inch nines is what I call them.
Right.
But it'd make me feel better shooting them one time before going out there because I shot the other ones so many times. But I would imagine, we weren't a company in 2017 and how much we've changed since 19. I'm sure something's changed up in them and their production processes since 17 and still shoot good. But it makes me feel better knowing that before shooting it out of turkey as I usually would. I got the green leaf box, so I don't know if that had much to do with it, but I did like them. I think it was 9s and 10s I shot, and then Seal shot his 20 gauge. He shot 9s out of it, and then you got an 870 as well, and you shot 7s and 9s, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
But
I really liked them.
Yeah, no, they do good.
Which I've shot 7 and 9s out of that before.
Really?
But I don't know. It was, that box looked a little different than my old box.
Yeah.
But shot
mm-hmm.
pretty dang good.
Yeah, no, I did.
Really good, actually.
And, yep. So we are pretty good on the firearm and shell side. And now all that's left is I'm going to go through my turkey vest here for long. And I got my preseason little, ain't rituals, but I guess you'd call them traditions or usuals that I go through. And past couple years, due to babies and stuff, they've been a little rushed or a little makeshifted or a little, we'll just get around to it later. But usually the week before the opener down in Mississippi and stuff, I try to put it off as long as I can, because if I do it in, early February or something, then I can't sleep. So I try to not think about turkey hunting as much as I can. I don't like really practice calls or do anything like that. And I will around mid-January start, rolling through some mouth calls maybe, but if I start, that itch starts getting too much on me, I'll just like, all right, that's too much. I'll stop being productive in my daily life, trying to, do too much scouting and stuff, which we've been doing a little bit lately and trying to, hear one here and there. But I'll do that, and I'll, do my permethrin and stuff like that, spray my clothes down this week, which we're probably going to do here shortly. And another thing I do is I kind of condition my boots. Mm-hmm. Put a lot, put that, this conditioner is what it's called, or waterproofing conditioner. Maybe I'll do my hiking boots and my rubber boots. And other than that, I kind of do a quick rundown and double check I got everything, because most of the time I don't. And that's it, you know. Which this year we'll have our new pants and stuff, so I got to remind me, go through my old pants, make sure I get the gloves and mask out of those pockets. I try to keep my right glove and my mask in my right pocket and my left glove in my left pocket. And if that method fails me, I got usually three fingers cut out of my right and two fingers cut out of my left if I'm trying to fumble around in the dark. But yeah, that and that's about it. I can't think of much else, you know. I'm sure as soon as I get there, I will like kind of spray my gun down, stuff like that, which this year I'll have a different sling and, you know, little things like that I'll put on it and whatnot. But, we got to get used to the whole camera thing.
That's been a fun one to learn. Or convince you of more as a...
Yeah.
I don't mind running them.
Yeah.
I feel naked without them at this point, I think. Some days I hate them. I mean, there's a few days I hate them, but most of the time, if I don't have a camera... I mean, I carry a camera deer hunt with me,
right.
And those videos will definitely never see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just because I don't... A, I can practice for turkey season in the deer woods, but I can...
Right.
Yeah, learn something different, and if I mess it up, I mess it up.
Which I was fortunate to tag along with Lake and Jordan some this year, who
right.
were gurus at it, and they taught me a lot in the deer season. Because I did not know what was going on in the deer woods. I'm sitting there like, oh, there's one. Oh, yeah, sit down. but I got to learn a lot about the camera stuff from them. And, but yeah, the problem now is we've got the video. We still have multiple videos from last year.
Right.
That haven't been edited and put out there, because I think it's taken us longer than the average person to edit them and publish them, because we're still getting the hang of the whole Adobe or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
We got, but hopefully we all have some trips. We can sit in the passenger seat and one of us can be doing that, and we'll be pumping it out there to you. So some videos have turned out pretty good. You know, the ones we filmed accidentally, easily, I guess, made it pretty smooth sailing, pretty vanilla. But it's just, we've got so much going on right now. We're going to get them videos out. And that's why we filmed them. That's why I didn't shoot like seven turkeys trying to. So we better get them out, because I was pretty pissed.
Not because they weren't on camera. It's because
you let
it get in your way.
Right. I was trying hard to do it, because y'all were doing it. And I'm like, well, I don't want to let them down. You know, they're probably, you know, kind of.
Hunter will get stuck for 10 minutes trying to cut it on.
Right.
And then realize that turkey don't walk past him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's probably not going to happen this year.
Yeah.
But no, we're going to talk a little bit about early season turkey hunting. I was thinking about it the other day, and kind of some of the differences between the early season and the late season and the mid season, and, you know, while you're kind of trying to figure out. I had to move that. But while you're kind of trying to figure out what the turkeys are doing and what you should be doing, and it's a little more than just getting the feel for calling again. I know last year the first time I picked up my slate was in the woods. First, I mean, I unboxed my box in the back of the truck before we walked in the woods. I didn't have no time to – I had no idea I was even going hunting until April, and all of a sudden it's March 16th. And
you
better hope you got it. Yeah. So
about that.
Everything was there, enough was there to hunt, and, you know, you pick up, it's like riding a bike, most things, but the turkeys are usually a little different, and that's what I wanted to dive into. A lot of times, which, I mean, folks can be hearing this right before the season, but I don't know how this year's going to be. I hadn't had enough, you know, woods time thus far in the past week or so to see what the turkeys are doing or how far along they are in the process, but they're not gobbled out.
yeah.
Don't throw that out there.
I did hear that this weekend.
I bet you did. I bet a lot of people are saying that.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not going to be gobbled out, and they are potentially could still be in groups. And that's, you know, if you're hunting them and you're wanting to kill one, that's usually a good – there's about a 5 or 6 day span there where those gobblers are still together – they are actively, you know, pursuing and breeding hens, and the hens are still together, and they're just getting closer and closer and closer, and they gobble a lot because it's like, I feel like there's still a lot more competition going on. It's not necessarily work yet, you right, know. It's still, they're just as amped as we are, I promise. And you know, that's kind of that gold, those golden few days where you could potentially position yourself in between them, and just don't screw it up from there.
Yeah,
you know.
That's the golden words there.
But that's easy to do, nevertheless, to screw it up, and we do it all the time. And it's just it's good to be in between. And then there's times where you'll be in between them, and this happens a lot. They still meet up. They don't ever walk right at them. I mean, they do, but I'm saying you might be in a beeline between both of them, but all it takes is one of them to take a hard step right two or three times, and where they do meet is not going to be within, you know, 25 yards of you. You're really banking on a small radius there.
Right.
But that's, I mean, that's, if I'm hunting early season, that's what I'm looking for, is where are they? That's the first question I try to answer, is not where were they in November, definitely, because they probably ain't there, and not where were they last week, because now is when they're going to be moving and doing stuff, and they might be roosting, you know, closer, you know, closer to X, Y, or Z. It don't matter, but they're going to be, things are a-changing, we'll put it that way, right. You know, and it's a lot more than just shinier feathers and, you know, brighter wattles. It's, you know, their mentality's changing just like ours is, and they might not be where you heard them when you heard them. You found that out last year, opening day, that, you know, you pulled up and kind of were bummed that that turkey wasn't there no more. So, but luckily, someone else had heard him early and thought he was still there and beat you to the spot, went in there. And I
went to a different spot where they had possibly moved to. Or maybe some other turkeys had moved. Right. I don't know what, if they were.
But they weren't there when you were listening the other times.
Right.
You know?
Which, yeah, the last time I'd heard a bird in there was a week or more, maybe 2 weeks before that, and I couldn't find him again. I was just struggling to locate him, and turned out he moved across the road. And I, you know, had listened that same week and just rode that whole side of the road off just because I'd not heard a bird over there, and pretty much covered front to back of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought, you know, turkeys ain't gonna, apparently don't hang out over here. They hang out on that other side. I need to at least put myself in those woods.
Yeah.
And thank goodness, boys was sitting there that morning.
Be glad they were.
I tied into two of them. And I mean, I don't know. It was a very hectic hunt. All there, pitch perfect all at the same time, I guess. I don't know what you want to say about it. It's the a very good inclination, whichever one of those words that I'm hitting on, of what, you know, we say about turkey hunting. You know, it's a full-blown turkey hunting one video kind of thing.
Exemplification. There you go.
There we go.
Hey, I think. I don't know.
I'm lucky to get through decent mechanic school. You don't judge me. Anyways, but, yeah, I mean, it went about as perfect as you could have an unperfect hunt, I guess.
Which, I mean, that's just a good example of why you still go, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you just go and take the day by the day and not what it was. Because, I mean, if you hunt them on the third day, your expectations are totally different than they are the first day. But you have a month to think about the first day is why it's usually haywire on the first day, because the plans change so much and the turkeys do whatever you think they wouldn't do. And if you go in there knowing that it's not going to happen however you think it's going to happen, you know, your reactions are probably going to be a little better.
Right.
You're not going to get as flustered or position yourself wrong. That's what I mean by don't mess it up. You know, don't set up for something that hadn't happened yet. And don't call for something that hadn't, you know, called for a call, I guess you'd say. But I've done, and I'm saying this not as like a coaching point. I'm saying like listing things I've done in the past in the early, you know, early season that I have noticed since.
Well, I also get too excited in the early season. That's what I've learned. And I have to really try to watch that a little bit more. But when I do get a turkey working, I'll go to, you know, I lose every thought I've ever had in my life. And just do the stupidest stuff. I still do some stupid things through the year that I, you know, bite me in the butt. But you know, that first week or two, it's kind of like, all right, find your groove and get right. on in it, you know.
Yeah.
And that groove needs to hurry up.
And there's certain things I'll hear. I'm like, I forgot they did that. I forgot not to do this. Or, you know, and I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is just is patience, you know. Understand that when you're hunting them in the early season, you know, the floor is wide open.
Yeah.
You so to speak. Not, I mean, figuratively and literally. I mean, that's another point to hit on is how open the woods are. You know, you can't really make the moves you might have made late April last year and try to run and gun it and stuff. You might be forced to patience, even if you don't want to be patient, if they're on the ground and it's a wide open bottom between you.
Right.
Yeah, you can see a long way in some of these places, but if you're hunting in the pines and stuff like that and it's a little thicker and you can kind of get by with a lot more. But I'm saying, you know, be patient with the birds that – those hens and those gobblers both wake up with the same intention that day, and it's still, you know, they're not going to take their eye off of them. They're going to get henned up, and they're going to gobble their, you know, head off on the limb. And when they hit the ground, they're probably landing next to why they were gobbling, you know. If not, they're going to be with them very shortly. You won't kill a lot of them in the early season off the limb or maybe the next day off the limb kind of deal, you know. We'll see them this time of year, 3:30 p.m., and they're still, you know, 9-0 with these hens and just not even breaking loose. Probably hadn't taken the time to peck the ground yet.
Yeah.
They're just trying – I mean, the list is very long is what I'm trying to get at of the hens. You're going to have to kind of – if it gets with them,
yeah,
be ready to wait. And don't, you know, don't give up on it, but don't mess it up either. Don't try to force something that's not going to happen.
Right.
Because when those turkeys get henned up, it's, you know, my mind instantly goes to calling a hen over. That's all you can do is, you know, I say all you can do. There's times when I have, and I'm sure a lot of other people might even have better luck at it, calling a gobbler off of them. But, like, going back to our early season last year, it was very, very, very meticulously timing a call, one or two calls, five or six max, when to yelp, and it took an hour of patience to wait and wait and wait until a subordinate, you know, I wouldn't say a satellite gobbler, but in 3 weeks would be a satellite gobbler probably.
Mm-hmm.
So they were still in a group, Jake's hens and gobblers, but, you know, gobbling their heads off, Jake's caulking everywhere, hens yelping, yada, yada, just until one got in the very back call, just waited and waited and waited and waited. We were fortunate enough, or I was fortunate enough to see them. Y'all couldn't see them, but I could see them. Most times you can't see them. And that's something I do a lot of times is if I ever do have the opportunity to watch a flock of turkeys work naturally or even respond to calls and stuff like that, I like to go back and imagine it. If I couldn't see them, how would that have sounded? And a lot of times it's nothing. You think you bumped them, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever I just watched, you know, I'm not, you know, quote-unquote entertained watching them. But if I couldn't watch them, I'd think they weren't there. I think, you know, I'd messed it up. I'd leave. Thank goodness I could see them and would wait and then, you know, call randomly and, you know, something might happen. But yeah, just being patient with turkeys. I mean, let the turkeys be turkeys and you know, you start getting in there and just really trying to do stuff that, hey, you ain't practiced in a while. You know, right. You're coming in there pretty rusty. And B, you got a lot of competition right there, I feel like. And hunters, too. If you're hunting public land, everybody's going to be out that opening week or two until they get, you know, their butts whipped and go home or, you know, can't hear them once the foliage gets there. A lot of folks, you know, you can hear a long way. A lot of folks who don't like to walk up in there a lot can still, you know, hear them from, you know, gravel roads and stuff. And, you know, it's just, I like hunting in the early season a lot more. A lot of folks hate it because of the open woods, but I would rather.
Yeah.
It just feels turkey to me.
Mm-hmm. Which last year we had a very different situation than we normally do, which I know you were in Georgia, so you didn't really, may not have seen it as much, but we had a very dense foliage last year. And like that bird I hunted opening morning or killed opening morning, like I was slipping up in there, and the last, you know, four or five times I'd heard a turkey, you know, I kind of was pretty able to, easy to pick out where he was at because there wasn't any foliage. And that's probably why I wasn't hearing any of these birds because I wasn't getting in the back that, you know, back in there far enough. But I ended up walking under some hens and like, oddly enough, if I bump a hen off the limb and can get sit down right mm-hmm. there or
replace her
within 10 or 15 feet of that, it normally works out well, which that situation is a good one to unfold because, like, when I did sit down, there was more hens to my right kind of behind me. I'd walked a little bit past them, actually, and they pitched down 10 feet yep. from me. Like, I'm sitting where they don't sit, and that mm-hmm. gobbler's going to walk right up here to them. And, of course, that was their morning. The hens went to the gobbler,
mm-hmm.
and they stayed out there 60 yards just behind the palmetto bush.
That I could do, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought I had it whipped and would be out of there 10 minutes after daylight, you know, or shooting light or whatever, and fly down, I should say.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, ended up, turkey just wouldn't budge, had the hen sitting there with him, and, I mean, I tried a little silence, tried a little bit of hardcore calling,
mm-hmm.
I blew the woods out of there and all the kitchen sinks, but what ended up happening was a turkey putted behind me, boop, boop, boop.
Mm-hmm.
And those hens turned and ran a mm-hmm. beeline and were about to run me over, and they saw me and spooked, mm-hmm. and I just thought, it's over with, and so I just stayed there, mm-hmm. you know, sitting there looking at the map and whatnot, trying to figure out, all right, there was another bird way down in there that I heard twice. And turns out that must have been the bird that
yeah.
made one or two yelps. I don't know what they were. I don't remember correctly, but putts or clucks or mm-hmm. whatever it was. And those hens knew his
mm-hmm.
two little, hey, I'm in your,
yeah.
In your house over here. You know, come on to this room or whatever. And those hens left that other gobbler like it was nothing.
Yeah.
Just boom, gone.
It's, I mean,
now, I'm sure he would have been following if they wouldn't have seen me. I was just not set up in the
probably.
Best spot. And I probably would have shot that turkey and still to this day never would have known the turkey was behind me.
Yeah.
You know, I just assumed it was a hen or something. But I just assumed at the time it was the hen I'd bumped off the limb. But I've killed several opening weekend or two weekends that I've been pushing in there trying to close distance on him. On a goblin turkey and ended up bumping yeah. ends off, and those are the normally the mornings I kill them.
Because, like, kind of going back, they're changing stuff, so, you know, they get in a little routine, and you come in, and you don't know the routine. You can think you know the routine they do and stuff right. like that, but it, you know.
They still ain't got their routine figured out
right,
either.
Right, so they don't.
So they're trying to.
The trust door is open right now, right. if that makes sense. So, I mean, there's a chance there. Those gobblers are going kind of just, you know, believe what they hear,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, if you're half decent at calling or, you right. know when and where and what to call, you know, their trust door is kind of wide open. But, yeah, I mean, calling the hens is a new ball game, and I find myself probably doing it more than, you know, calling the gobblers, especially in the open season. And a little bit is how I hunt and stuff, and I can't remember necessarily the last time I just sure enough kill one off the roost, you know, flew down, walked to me, you know. Yeah. A lot of them lately have been finding them late, you know, it's an unfamiliar place, not even, you know, or hearing them from a way distance, don't even fool with the roost, you know. By the time I get there, he's on the ground, got to reestablish right. a plan there. But, you know, just where you set up, where, you know, you're sitting high on them and expecting them to move a little bit, and there's still acorns and bottoms and stuff that could potentially go there, and your sound is going to carry. They can show off a lot more, so just trying to find the open wooded areas more than anything. And, you know, just and my kind of natural style of hunting is, you know, curiosity and trying to pull one around a bend over a little knoll and make him do something to look, and making sure that's as close as I can possibly get and positioning that to my left. Mm-hmm. I'm right-handed. And the same works for the hens. You know, I think sometimes the hens can be a little more curious than the gobbler if they're together. The gobbler is not wondering anything. You know, he's just there at that right. point. He's in utopia, so to speak. But the hens, especially if they've already been bred, or I don't know how the pecking order goes, if they're way down the line, you know, they can get a little curious.
Mm-hmm.
If just some making natural turkey sounds and stuff, and I always like to, I mimic them a lot. But they get to whatever they're saying, I'll try to say back.
Yeah.
Even if they're calling it a different hen, and sometimes when those hens are in bigger groups, you know, their confidence kind of goes up too, and they'll try to come over there, and then and there's sometimes that I'll really, you know, really get on out there and put, you know, try to wait until a hen is her head's behind a tree. If I'm going back and forth with her, if her head's behind a tree, because they look, you know, a turkey gobbles, and I feel like the whole world's shaking. He doesn't know what's happening when he's gobbling, yeah, so to speak. But a hen, she's cutting and yelping, you know, long. Like, I noticed this not long ago, a place me and Seals hunted that time in Mississippi,
mm-hmm,
a separate day, though, that a hen came up cutting and yelping and almost – it's one of them red car effects. Once you notice it, you start really noticing it. If she was walking, she'd cut and yelp 10 to 14 times. I mean, it was long. Oh, yeah. And then as she walked, and if she wasn't walking, she'd cut more and yelp two or three times.
Right.
And then cut, you know, it's just different. So I kind of remember that. You know, if I'm standing up and trying to move towards them, and I'll elongate that number of yelps I have in a little sequence, or if I'm sitting there, I try not to, and just little things like that, and I'll wait until her head, which she can see, you mm-hmm. know, they're kind of cutting and looking and looking hard, and I'll wait until if I do have eyes on her, which they're gonna have to get close if you're gonna get the gobbler close,
right.
So if I can see her out in the open or anything, I'll wait until there's a tree or something between us, and then I'll call, and she's in the wide open looking. I won't say nothing, make her a little curious, and then she'll kind of be like, all right, I ran her off, and then go back, and as soon as she gets to where her eyes and mine don't connect no more, I'll do it again.
Right.
And she'll come back. Hens always, to me, it seemed to come back more than a gobbler will. You know, a gobbler comes, checks it out, doesn't see a hen, he goes off. You're very lucky if he comes back a second time. A hen, I've seen several come back and forth. Could be a different hen, obviously,
yeah, true,
but I don't think it is. And they cover some ground looking, and they let you know a gobbler will gobble here and there, but a hen lets you know the route she's taking,
right,
you know.
And they don't always bring the gobbler with them.
No.
I learned that with that hen that flew into me in Bradley last
mm-hmm.
year. Because we were set up on the edge of a – were you finished your story?
Yeah.
Okay. We were set up kind of in some clean woods, but there was a thicket between us and the gobbler.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there with Bradley, and I – heard the bird gobble two or three times, and this is a Houdini of a bird. We hunted him several times and never ended up getting him within 100 yards
mm-hmm.
of us. But this one hen, she started yelping and cutting him and stuff, so I fired up with her again, just, you know, called back, mocked her or whatever you want to say, and I could tell I fired her up, and I kind of went quiet, and I hear pop, 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 pop,
mm-hmm.
flying, and I'm like, you know, I knew this bird was on the ground. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I said, she just flew, you know. I looked at Bradley. I said, I bet she's flying over here.
Mm-hmm.
And she flew over all that thicket and landed 15 feet from me and went to key-keying and and just wore it out and just was causing commotion. And I let her just do it for a minute because, I was kind of caught off guard. I'm like, goodness, if this gobbler flies in behind her, it's going to be
– yeah.
We need to try and ease the gun
ready.
Up, be ready, which – she stayed there. She climbed a tree that had, you know, 45-degree fell over it and got hung up on another tree. She walked up that whole trunk and just key. I mean, she key-keyed more than
most
do.
That's another thing. I will hear a lot more key-keys in the early season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I guess technically real, real late in the season, if they have poles and stuff, they will. But I will. I mean, they're kind of – I mean, there's a lot of first rodeos going around between
yeah.
Jackson Jennings
and
stuff
still
like that, you know.
Groups. They
right.
they normally – if they're getting the group – I don't know what's the word of the type of call a kiki is.
It's more of an, I guess, assembly-ish.
Assembly call
it's not the
is
assembly
what they say,
call,
yeah.
But, you know, it's
one
the
of,
purpose.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, if they're in groups or have been in groups, they're probably
mm-hmm.
going to be – or if they're looking for you, I've heard a lot of kikis, you know.
Right. That's what they're meaning. Like, they're trying to
looking,
group.
Or come
you
over
know.
Come where I can see you kind of thing. So
And like, going back to things are changing, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's like a, you know, a less than one-year-old, what's it called, Jenny. I guess. Yeah, Jenny.
Yeah.
She probably don't know that, hey, this stuff's about to, everybody's about to split up.
Yeah.
Some wild things are about to happen.
Right.
You know, this first rodeo kind of deal. So she's probably like, where in the heck is everybody go? You know,
uh-huh.
why am I always getting left by myself? You know, she's looking, so I do a lot of that. And, you know, and I've had some good luck with it. And,
yeah.
you know, it's awesome when the Jakes are grouped up. So you're going to get fooled a couple times in early season. I mean, I will in the late season, but for some reason they kind of – they lose their cockiness a little bit as the season
yeah.
goes, I found.
I had one come in on me last year that I swear to you was
yeah.
6 years old.
I'm telling you, the hardest gobbler I've ever been Jakes for.
Yeah, he was the hardest gobbler. Bird acted like a grown turkey. I mean, he – can't, I positioned myself on about an 8-inch incline on this big flat, and he walked that 8-inch incline the whole way to me. And I just saw it thinking, like, hey, it's not that damp right there.
Yeah.
But, you know, more as of, and then I'm like, it's kind of a little knoll for him to walk, you know. And, I mean, it was higher out there where he was walking around on. And then, you know, I mean, I was like, shoot, if this bird would have been a 2-year-old, it would have been home.
Yeah, I wish.
And, I mean, he came up in there 15 feet from me and never saw me, just stayed there, got hammering right in my ear for 20 minutes probably before he finally just moved on with his life.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, I got fired up.
I get frustrated at Jake's because – and I get frustrated knowing Jake's are in there because I start not trusting myself. You know, that could be – you know, I'm not quite as committed to, you know, doing something because if I don't want to, A, booger them. B, it's a lot harder to booger them. They're very – Jake's are pretty daggone incompetent to hunt and pressure. You know what I mean? Obviously, for obvious reasons, they've never seen it. But B, they just – I don't think their fear is there yet. They, you know, they just – they don't have that – you know, skepticality to them quite yet. I mean, I've seen them see people and still, like, just turn their heads out as, what is that? You know?
Right, curiosity.
Not threat, but more curiosity, you know? So, and then they're going, if you're calling and there's one in the area or a couple in the area, they're going to come walk up and pick your gun barrel and figure out what you are and, you know, then God forbid you move and they'll act like the world's ending and, you know, then the gobbler hangs up out there and you're like, God, I hate Jake's.
But. Yeah, and I mean, I've had some instances with, you know, one, maybe two Jakes come in there, and then a long beard will hear them and be like, hang on, they done found him a hen, not in my house, you know, and he'll pull off some hens and come over there just to set the tone straight quick. But if you have 4 or 5 Jakes coming in there,
different story.
A guy probably ain't going to go over there with you.
That's kinda,
so if you're sitting there calling Jakes in every day, hey, you may want to go on somewhere different, you know.
It's going to be tough.
Or be a little quieter.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was about to say is depending on the circumstance, if you got a Jake in there, maybe 2 Jakes in there, I'll do what I can to get him to gobble because, I mean, that gobbler knows he's in there. And he might not know what he and you are, but he knows he wants you more than – he wants you that Jake to have you. You know, but another thing is just like you said is if I look up and there's 11 to 14 Jakes there, I'm probably not trying to call a gobbler over here because he's – A, it's going to be hard to talk him into it. B, you're just asking to mess some stuff up.
Yeah.
You know, just let him ease on. I'm getting up as quiet as I can and walking out. But at that point, the last place I heard that turkey, this one, I don't want to call and see if he's close. And then, because you're going to call the Jakes back.
Right.
Like, they're not smart enough to not know to not come back. You're going to be doing this like a revolving door at that point. But.
And another scenario, early season stuff I want to talk about is – if you want to move on now?
Yeah.
Okay. It's hard. I'm having a hard time telling when your stories are done. Sorry.
I can go on forever.
I know. But anyways, another early season thing I see a lot is maybe not the first week, but up to about the third week, you'll hear a group of turkeys, especially if you're roosting or, you know, hooting on at them on the limb, a group of turkeys in one area, 2 to 3 gobblers, and then one lone bird. And what I kind of always have assumed that was, you know, there's a group of young – all right, there's 2 scenarios. Normally it's an old bird by himself or like a normal bird that's been getting his butt whooped. It's possibly a Jake, and, like, it depends on what the group of turkeys is. But more times than not, I've ended up killing that lone bird, and he being a very large turkey. And that's what happened last year. That's what happened at – I don't know, 3 seasons ago, that one I caught off the hill, through a fence, through a creek, and like every scenario that you can never call one across, I somehow did, into an open field, to one lone tree in the middle of this open field because it's the only place I could get. But like, that's another scenario I like to position myself between those two if I can. If I got a group of turkeys on one side and a lone bird gobbling on the other side, that lone bird normally ain't going to gobble at all because he's been getting his butt whooped by that group of turkeys. But he has not moved on far enough because it probably happened 2 days ago, and he don't want to quite leave the group and go find him a new set of hens.
Yeah.
But once that group gets occupied with those hens and they're stuck sitting there for the next 8 hours, he's kind of like, hey, I want to make a friend real quick. You know, and you can pretty much talk
to him. You're giving him attention when none of the other ones are.
Right.
You know.
So.
And that's a good point. And a lot of times, I mean, I'm not going to say a lot of times, but I can think of several when that joker, you know, he might have some shorter, sharper spurs, but a good 10.5 is probably, you know, over 3, you know. And just, you know, big droopy waddles and, you know, a heavy bird and might be, you know, kind of past his prime a little bit. And there's, even if they're not jays, there's some 2-year-olds in there. 3 turkeys against 1 turkey, I don't care, you know, them 3 turkeys only have 1 wing, they're still going to whoop him up pretty good, you know, if it's just one of them. And a lot of times, you'll get in there and that turkey's blowing it out of the water. It's old. Here's the trick. Go to the turkey that's gobbling a lot because there's a reason he is. You know, if you're trying to pick between multiple, I've caught up with some that I can get almost guarantee the scenarios. They're misplaced. There's no reason he should be gobbling this early, this often, at nothing. He is looking for something. And you can get in there and be that something, you got a good shot. You know, just, you know, be concealed and act like a turkey. And, you know, a lot of them times is when I will, you know, do a fly down or something like that, trying to get him on the ground because he's taking whatever bait he gets. If he hears a hen way off, that's when I don't really necessarily sit there and just, you know, the rule of thumb, never call the one goblin on the limb, yada, yada, or make him answer you twice. Don't let him know you're on the ground yet, so he's going to expect you to walk under him. True, but if he's really blowing it up and I know there's other turkeys and he's kind of separated, he's going to either, A, try to get with that group, or B, he can hear you can't even hear, he's going to head towards him. The next time he gobbles on the ground is almost, you know, half a mile away.
Right.
You know, he's moving somewhere. He ain't where he wants to be. Or he wouldn't be gobbling that much. Considering circumstance, you know, weather and pressure, and sometimes they just really like to blow it out the water. But a lot of times, if there's just one eyeball doing that, I will do a fly down. I will do, you know, something to make him try to, you know, come to me. And a lot of times, you better just set the wing down, because sometimes as soon as he hears it, he's saying, thank God.
Yeah.
You know,
he can get off this limb for 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He hears one turkey fly down.
And that's all it takes.
Setting wings and rolling.
Yep. And I probably do a little more fly down stuff in the early season, maybe, because they are kind of, like I said, the old trust doors open, and you know they're not expecting as much out of the flock. And once the hens start nesting, or especially sitting on them and stuff, or laying eggs and whatnot, but once they start getting in their little routine, they've got their little time window. They're like, all right, you know, when the sun gets to here is when the hens start leaving. Then you can kill them, you know, late mornings and stuff, a little easier. They're by themselves a lot. They're kind of getting back into eating and, you know, finding cooler spots and, you know, in the late season, warmer days. But early season, they're 90 to nothing. They got one thing on their mind. Y'all know what it is. But it's a matter of being in the right place, right time, and not getting seen, mainly. You know, and a bunch of stuff that, you know, we could dive into. We probably ain't even got time to, but, you know, dressing differently. You got to dress in layers. You know, you got to, a lot of times it's wet and stuff. I wear my rubber boots a lot more in the early season than I do in the later season. You know, even if it's damp, but a lot of times it's still going to be some frost and stuff.
I'm normally in a hoodie and long johns or something. Or sweatpants.
That's why
my
shirt we made. I made sure to make it as thin as possible, because not because of when you hunt 95 degrees weather, because I dress in layers and I want a layer that's as thin as possible, and just enough to, you know, to wear whatever I'm wearing on the outside, touching my skin ain't too cold. Got that double layer, whatever, it makes a big difference, at least to me.
I agree.
But and the pants are a little. They're not like nanotech technology lightweight stuff. They're kind of durable, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's what walks through stuff.
They stretch too. Goodness.
Chase was having a heyday. Chase ain't never put a pair like this on.
Right.
And
he was
like,
fired.
What in the world?
We probably covered 5 or 6 miles after you know, because after we got done taking the pictures in them or whatever, like, we had a couple hours to kill, so we just started scouting for turkeys and doing whatever. And shoot, I wore my whole outfit around. They were like, Chase, you look like you're about to go hunt. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, we got a video of us pattern shotguns. Chase still ain't taking his camouflage off. He's out there doing
oranges
in them. You know, he's like, I'm never taking these off.
Yeah.
But
I have to get me a couple pairs have a yard pair and a hunting pair.
Because
I want to wear that. They're so comfortable. I want to wear them at the house.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty sweet. I ain't going to lie.
Yeah.
But But not that, and, you know, I'm trying to think of anything else of what we could potentially do differently in the early season. Good reminder to, you know, pay your respect to the bird and stuff. And so a lot of folks get – this is when they're, you know, their adrenaline is at their max, and I ain't gonna say bad decisions, but or childish decisions or anything like that, but folks love – turkey hunters like to talk about turkey hunting. Turkey hunters like to talk about themselves. That's a trait. Yeah. That ain't a shot at nobody. That's a trait of turkey hunting. It's a very individual sport. It's very skill-driven and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say it ain't worth being proud about, because that's also false. You know, if you're able to kill a turkey regardless of how big spurs are, how long the beard is, as long as it's, you know, over 6 inches, I'm not a fan of shooting jakes, even if it is legal. I'll put that out there. It's not a surprise to anybody. I do not condone shooting jakes regardless. But if it's a long beard full fan, like, long beard's long beard's a long beard to me.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, 100%. And killing one at all, if you do it, you know, in a room. We'll say the right way, and y'all know what I'm talking about. You know, there's several ways you can kill one. Right. Just like there's several ways you can do a lot of things, and that doesn't mean they're legal or illegal. I think there's a moral compass, and it's got a direction. It points towards right and wrong. But, you know, you've achieved something. You know, that's worth being proud about. But at the same time, you got to remember, you represent me and Chase and a lot of other people, too. You know, in the turkey hunt community, it's a very tight-knit group of us. And on table one or two, you want a little, you know, quick fame, likes and shares and reshares or whatever can – they'll get them, but it ain't necessarily worth it in the grand scheme of things. So, keep them a good head on shoulders. Act like you've been there before. It's kind of the mindset I have going in there. And, you know, we're fortunate to be able to do it regardless, whether it's, you know, from the good Lord or from a country standpoint where we're free to do this. Or, you know, I think a lot of us will agree, you know, we all know somebody in some shape, form, or fashion who did not grow up with a dad who took them hunting and, you know, didn't get in the woods until they were 25, 26. You know, a lot of us are a lot more lucky than you think, just being able to have the opportunity to do it. Somebody who told them about it, someone who took them one time. It doesn't have to be a dad or a family member, somebody who just took them under the wing. It could have been for one single morning and it ignited a fire. You know, we're all fortunate to be able to do it and, you know, just making sure that that's a point that gets across too, that you know, I think social media has done a good thing for, you know, habitat improvement and predation control and awareness about a lot of things, including legislation and stuff like that. And a lot of folks are, you know, I'm not gonna say putting their foot down or drawing a line or anything, but they're like, you know, hey, like friend to friend here, that kind of makes me look like a piece of crap too, because everybody, you know, knows us as turkey hunters, and, you know, we're not all like that.
You're right.
You know,
no, yeah, that's,
and we're, you know, thick-skinned as can be on a lot of stuff, but, you know, I want to represent turkey hunters as good as I possibly can, and that you can throw Spring Legion aside. That's
right.
You know, that's what I want to do. Just not an obligation. It's just a responsibility more than anything. So keep that in mind. Fellas, and don't forget to have fun, and don't forget to, you know, don't be scared to talk about turkey hunting, because that's why we do it. That's what I want to hear, is folks talking about turkey hunting. I want to hear about you killing a turkey. I want to see the turkey you killed, you know. It's not something you got to be the most humble person in the world and never speak of it kind of deal. A lot of folks kind of get a little twisted, you know, they're like, wait a minute, you know, we can talk about them. Yeah, you know, it's still a good thing, dude.
Right.
Like, it's not, you know, you be happy.
And I love.
Be pumped up. Just don't overdo it when it comes to, you know, how you represent the bird's, you know, remains and stuff. Right. You know, I mean, it's not that gory.
Yeah. But another thing I love about talking about it is the mess ups and
yes.
misses and, you know, whoop days, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I love those stories, just almost, probably more than the actual ones they got the bird on. And, I mean, I'd almost rather talk about that than the ones that did work some days, you
well,
know.
That's the thing. I mean.
Hey, make me feel like I'm not right. the only one getting my tail whooped for yeah. 2 weeks straight here. Anybody else having any other issues?
Exactly. And that's, I mean, that happens more often than not. Right. You know, the opportunity is there. And the, I mean, you, every turkey I've ever shot has something's different about it. It's a new story to tell, something wild or something more vanilla about it than the last one. You know, some are kind of boring. I mean, I was in the right place at the right time, and I get one time, and he was looking for a yelp, and that's all it took. And, you know, pretty boring story to tell, but that's how it happened, and I'm definitely going to take that because I can think of a lot of times where I went through five mouth calls and two slate calls and, you know, put 12 miles on my boots to hear one gobble and didn't shoot him, you know.
Right.
But it's a lot of stuff that happens in turkey woods that you don't get to see every, you know, every year or ever again, you know. Soak those in and go in with a mindset to learn. I still do that. I'm telling you, I still do that so much. The day I comprehended that I would never be great at turkey hunting was the day I kind of started getting a little better at turkey hunting because I started wanting to learn more about turkey hunting from the turkeys, from other folks, and appreciated that I'm never going to actually get there. You know,
right.
There's always going to be a turkey smarter than me, and he's probably out there right now. And if stars align and I shoot him, there's one smarter than him out there, and I will never get to the end. I will never perfect it, and that's why I love it. That's why I like doing it. And it's you'll never be perfect. You know, even if there's a bird out there that you can kill, there's a day out there where you can't kill him on that day, at least. And you're going to lose as much as you win, if not more. If you're batting 50-50, you're pretty daggone good turkey hunter.
Yeah. I always like to tell myself they have a pre-decided death day.
Yeah.
Day of death or whatever, time of death or whatever you want to say. Because, I mean, sometimes it's just like it was just meant for him to gobble tomorrow, or it was meant for him to go right now.
Yep.
Like, I've always thought that, and it's just kind of one of the things, like, you ain't going to change that time.
Right. I mean, it's
of when
it's
going to
happen. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, we'll hit on one, I mean, kind of just tying it into a legitimate strategical approach to hunting early season turkey hunting. Hunting early season turkeys is, you know, you hear the phrase like, that turkey didn't want to die today. That's not like meaning necessarily destiny. That turkey's temperature is content is all get out. He does not want to cooperate with another one.
Right.
And you can, you know, wear the latex off the call. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. You know, he's good. He doesn't need you as bad as you think he might. Especially in these early end up days, you're going to catch that a lot. You know, I know a lot of people who are good turkey hunters who will not leave a goblin turkey, but not try a goblin turkey. Good example.
Right, yeah.
I was hunting with Daniel and Neil Hayes in Alabama a couple years ago, and one gobbled out of the blue on the limb very close to us. And we sat down 3 minutes maybe. I mean, I don't even know if we called at him. He might have gobbled one more time, but somehow or another, none of us are sitting within, like, really talking distance. We all kind of eventually all just looked at each other like, I don't think he's he didn't want to die. Wasn't acting like it. What he gobbled at wasn't it us, and it wasn't whatever call we did didn't garnish enough, you know, anything from him, and he gobbled at something else, and I'm like, just wasn't feeling it. Just some weird intuition all three of us happened to get at the same time. Like, I don't think he's, you know, let him fly down, and he flew down and walked the other way, and we slipped out, you know, and it wasn't even worth trying. We went and got one that wasn't kind of, quote, unquote, want to die today, you know. He answered you, and next time he answered was a little closer, and we had to, you know, duel it out with him a little bit, you know, calling to him and working him a little bit, but he was much more intrigued. And it's an odd to describe, you know it whenever they're feeling, they're interested, they're talking to you, they're you know, they're gobbling at you, not just gobbling,
right?
Because they like to gobble in the early season, you know. Mm. And it's a little gray area there. You gotta pick which side of the fence you're gonna be on,
and that just you learn that from hunting them more,
right?
And I still don't know it all the time.
Mm-mm.
I'm not sure of it many days.
Yeah, I mean,
and hunt a bird.
A lot of times it's the only one gobbling. You're going to have to hunt him.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. If it's your only
and it's
option.
A bad feeling knowing, like, he don't want to die today and I ain't got another one that does.
Yeah.
But a lot of times that happens. That's the only thing you got. And sometimes it works out. You know, you can try to make him want to die today, but doesn't mean you are.
No, it's like the old timer say, you know, got one to spend the season with or whatever. And, you know, once you get to kind of learning them, like, or you've heard the same bird 5 or 6 days or more in a row. You know, and all of a sudden you pull up, and he's doing something different. That it's kind of like, hold up,
He's wanting
today. Today might be the day. And, you know, I've had those days like that, and you just kind of soak in the whole day a little bit more because you think that, hey, this might be the last time I get to hunt this bird. And then you get your butt whooped.
Yeah. And you're like, well, tomorrow.
All right.
Good news is it ain't.
Yeah. Good news. Yeah.
But, them small ones are fun, and them late season ones are fun. But, you know, I like the early season ones, too. I like trying to get first crack at them if I can.
Yeah.
Because it can be a lot of adrenaline and then, you know, reestablishing that fire kind of deal. That's fun. And I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to hearing from a lot of folks who are also going to be in the woods this weekend and in the coming weeks of the other southern states and stuff like that. And we're in it. We're here. We made it. We survived. You know, all that's left now is to don the vest and load the gun. So, but we will hopefully, maybe next week, depending on when the Joker airs. If it's on Monday, I don't know. But if it's on Thursday or Wednesday or whenever, like these past couple of weeks have been, pretty at random, you know, we might have a good turkey story to tell.
May not.
Might not. I mean,
well, we may.
Forecast pretty.
Pretty rough till pretty, about Monday.
pretty rainy.
Yeah.
But. Yep, we'll see how that goes. We appreciate y'all listening to the Spring Legion Podcast. We'll catch you next week.